Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. In today's episode, we're talking about bloating, particularly the sort of bloating that makes you question everything you just ate and maybe even everything you've ever eaten, and the kind of bloating that makes you think you just need to stop eating altogether. That kind of bloating that you might feel after lunch, and you might feel that your belly just suddenly looks like you're 5-6 months pregnant, and it makes you dread going out for dinner sometimes, or, you know, when you maybe want to go out for dinner and then head off out somewhere straight away after dinner in wearing maybe some tight clothes, because you know that you'll just bloat like you're pregnant. Or the kind of bloating where you're, let's say, invited to a wedding and you've got this lovely dress that you want to wear, but you think, yeah, but we're going to be eating at this wedding, and how's my bloating going to be in this dress? And it's really annoying, and it's quite distressing as well. It's the kind of bloating that makes you feel like you just need to eat at home and not go anywhere afterwards, because you just need to be, yeah, at home in comfy clothes. It might be that you feel gas and pressure, and that the food just isn't digesting properly. And again, uncomfortable in your jeans. You feel like you need to wear loose, stretchy clothes all the time. And you're thinking, well, what am I eating? How come as well all these different meals, different foods are still causing the same thing? Do I just not need to eat? Should I just not eat anything? But the thing is, it's most of the time, it's not about what you ate. It's actually about your gut health generally and things that might be missing. So that's what we'll talk about. And the fact is, it's really common for women to start experiencing more bloating or new bloating and digestive issues as they move into their 40s and through their 40s. It's a really common experience during perimenopause, along with all the other wonderful symptoms and experiences that we've already got on that list. And that's really because your gut changes when our hormones change. So a brief lowdown on the gut hormone connection, particularly for perimenopause, is that as estrogen is erratically fluctuating, so 1 minute really high, and then we get these sharp drops, and as progesterone is declining as we move through our 40s, they don't just affect our mood, our sleep, our cycles, our periods, etc. They also affect our gut lining. So that lovely mucosal barrier, so this thick, strong barrier that lines our digestive tract, they also start to impact the health, the sort of quality of that gut lining. The gut lining is supposed to act like a security system, a security team. It sort of decides, it's a strong lining that decides what gets absorbed into the body for the good, and then the things that get escorted out of the body via a bowel movement, for example. But when our hormones change and drop, that security team becomes a bit slack. So declining estrogen has the potential to increase the gut's permeability, its leakiness, which I'll explain in a minute, and also has the ability to change the sort of composition, the balance of the bacteria in the gut, potentially shifting the good stuff, which is the friendly bacteria that's really protective for the gut lining. And the same goes for progesterone. It has the ability to do that as well. They're both lovely anti-inflammatory protective hormones in the body generally, and that also includes their actions within the gut. They're anti-inflammatory and protective. So again, as progesterone starts its decline, you know, which is the first thing that starts happening in early perimenopause before estrogen changes, we might already start to notice some really subtle shifts in the gut health and bloating. And then as estrogen starts its erratic behavior and we get those sharp drops, and then later on in perimenopause, when it actually starts to decline, a genuine decline as well, then we'll start to notice usually more and more, you know, the further we move through our 40s, more changes to our gut and our bloating situation. And that doesn't mean that we just have to accept that and put up with it. Like this is the physiology and that's it. We can support our gut. You know, that's the beauty of it. And that's what we're talking about today, and I've talked about it in some previous episodes, and I'll do more where I go a bit deeper on gut health. But that's the beauty, is it's, we need to know the physiology. We need to know what's going on. That's where the empowerment comes from. And then we can take action, because there is a lot we can do to support our gut. But if we don't know those things and we don't do them, then it can just get worse, to be honest. It can, if we don't do the right things. So yeah, so with that decline in progesterone, the change in estrogen, it drops and then it's decline as we get older through perimenopause. The kind of security team just becomes more like a bouncer that's like sleeping on the job, letting things in that have literally no business being in your bloodstream. So it's now allowing, because that protection isn't there, this sleepy bouncer is now allowing things like undigested food particles, toxins and other irritants into the bloodstream to sort of pass through this lining in out of the gut and into the bloodstream. And that is where this is something referred to as leaky gut. The proper term is intestinal permeability, so a permeable leaky gut lining. And when this happens, when these things that get through that have no business being in the body, we get an inflammatory response systemically, and that includes bloating and reactions to foods that we might have tolerated just fine before. And this is where the confusion comes in. It's like, well, I always eat these foods. Why is it suddenly causing a problem now? But it's usually not the food as such. It's more the mechanisms that food is being met with. That gut that the food is going into is usually the problem as opposed to the actual food. So what is the solution? So things like chewing more thoroughly, you know, having a diet rich in fiber, colorful vegetables, fermented foods every so often, these things can of course help. But sometimes, especially in perimenopause, your gut just needs a little extra TLC. In perimenopause, the body as a whole, your health as a whole, needs a little bit of more TLC than it would have done before. In our 20s and especially our 20s, the body is far more resilient. Our physiology is far more resilient to the onslaught of daily life. As we get to our sort of early 30s, again, we're still quite resilient. You know, that includes all sorts of things like the foods we would eat, the alcohol we'll drink, the late nights, the burning the candle at both ends, the kind of, yeah, the stress we can tolerate, the all of these different onslaughts, the exercise, the level of exercise, the type of exercise we can do. We get away with it a lot more in our 20s and still our early 30s. As we move into our later 30s, that can start to shift and change, not for everyone. But usually by late 30s, we're starting to notice, oh, we're just not as resilient. You know, the physiology just not as resilient as it was before. And then especially as we're in our 40s and moving through our 40s from early to mid to late up to your 50s and beyond then, our physiology is changing so much. It's so, so delicate with the shift and changes in estrogen and progesterone that for all aspects of our health, we will need more TLC. And that's where the understanding of physiology and then knowing things that we can do to support the different elements of our health is really important. So taking it back to the gut, though, things like having some L-glutamine. So this is, for example, we would get this in powder form. That's not to say that everyone needs to rush out and buy this, but I'm just talking about some examples of gut healing nutrients, things that we can do. So L-glutamine is an amino acid. It nourishes the gut lining. We can think of it as helping to sew the gaps back together that have been allowing this, you know, the unwanted particles and undigested foods to get into the bloodstream and cause inflammatory reactions and bloating. L-glutamine is this lovely healing amino acid that helps to support that. So like I said, we can buy it in powder form. We can mix it in a little bit of water first thing in the morning or last thing at night or both. And it can be supportive. We also want to be doing it alongside other things that are supportive. So I'll mention some other stuff as well. A nutrient or supplement called zinc carnosine is also really great for healing the gut lining. It's a supplement formed of zinc joined to the amino acid carnosine, and the two together, the joining of the two, is what's really helpful for supporting and repairing the mucosal lining of the stomach and the intestines. A common supplement for this is called known as Pepsin GI. And it provides a slow release of zinc to the gut lining because it's joined to the amino acid L-carnosine, which is what helps with the healing. And then simple things that we can do at home or also, I mean, collagen, a lot of people are buying into the sort of collagen craze now. And yes, there are definitely good reasons to use it. One of them being that collagen is one of the really important gut healing amino acids. So it can be very helpful. There are different types of collagen. I've done a whole separate episode on the different types, like 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5, and the sort of form of collagen that's best for, say, joint health, gut, specifically skin. So there are different types to be aware of. So you can maybe just read about that before you buy or listen to my episode before you buy. But also bone broth. So if you're somebody that has the time and the ability to make to simmer your bones for 24 hours, make a bone broth. Ideally, it is a 24-hour bone broth. So some places we can buy bone broth, and when you read the small print, it says it's 12 hours or 8 hours. And some people just do it for 12 or 8 hours at home. And that is helpful. But what's been shown to be even more helpful and really drawing out these wonderful gut lining healing nutrients from the bone is to do it for 24 hours. So yeah, of course it's overnight. So you can use a slow cooker or just, have it on the stove, preferably an electric stove without the fire. And I've done it. I do this from time to time. I go through phases of doing it every week, and then I don't do it for months, and then I do it every so often. Sometimes I buy it, but it's quite expensive to buy. It's definitely much better to do it yourself. And if you do it, say, for example, once a week, you might have enough for the next 4 or 5 days, and you use your bone broth therapeutically, ideally. I mean, obviously, you could use it as broth. You can add that broth into foods that you're cooking through the week, even your sort of bolognese sauces and things like that, or your soups. But to use bone broth therapeutically, you would have it on an empty stomach, like your morning coffee. So you'd have maybe 150, 200 mils or 100 mils, whatever you want, however long you want your bone broth to last. Heat it up in the morning in a little cup and sip it gently on an empty stomach. That's where the therapeutic benefits come in a little bit more. So bone broth, basically simmering bones, whether it's chicken, beef, for the 24 hours, it helps to draw out really nourishing amino acids. So collagen being one of them, gelatin, glutamine, and proline specifically. They help to repair and strengthen the intestinal lining. Glycine acts as an anti-inflammatory and helps with detox as well, detoxification in the liver. Bone broth also contains, as well as those lovely healing amino acids, it also contains electrolytes and minerals like calcium and magnesium to support the cells within the gut lining to give them what they need to thrive and heal. Probiotics have also been shown to reduce leaky gut and inflammation to the gut lining. So your friendly bacteria, basically, that's what probiotics are. They're like soldiers that line, as I said earlier, that helps. They form part of that soldier team, that team of soldiers that line the gut lining, fending off any danger. So if you're low on friendly bacteria, then you have less soldiers, you have less protection. And over time, if those soldiers are never replenished, let's say you're having lots of antibiotics and you're not replenishing that friendly bacteria that's likely been killed off. Over time, as those soldiers just aren't there, then of course, over time, that gut lining gets more and more damaged, right, and becomes more leaky or permeable. So probiotics can be really helpful. They also help to reduce inflammation, as I said. So that's going to be really great for preventing bloating after we eat. There are lots of different, obviously, types of probiotics on the market, lots of different brands and labs that are making them. So again, we kind of do get what we pay for with probiotics. Anything really cheap is likely not to be giving you what it actually says on the tin, although, you know, there might be that in the capsule itself when we actually absorb it, depending on how well it's made, how good that lab is. We may or may not, you know, actually absorb that much from the capsule. So just be careful with where you're kind of looking to buy those. Things like stress, poor sleep, alcohol, too much caffeine, particularly on an empty stomach, you know, every day. Ultra processed foods. I say ultra processed because processed foods themselves get a bad rap. But, you know, if we're going to be really technical about it, a good quality made hummus, for example, in a shop is a processed food, but it's not an unhealthy food. So ultra processed foods would be the ones that are really, you know, causing the damage. Too much sugar every day, white flour foods, these can all hurt the gut lining. They kind of, you know, insult it a little bit and strip away that those protective mechanisms. So keeping all of these to a minimum is a good idea. One thing I forgot to say about probiotics is that, as I said, the decline in estrogen, the changes in estrogen, the decline in progesterone, the decline specifically in estrogen has been shown to strip away the friendly bacteria, kind of impact that balance of bacteria. So it's just something to be aware of. Again, yeah, maybe we never needed probiotics in the past, but in our 40s, we just might need them because it's time where, like I said, we need extra support in most aspects of our health. So just something to consider. So when your gut lining is strong, your whole body just feels more resilient, including your digestion, and there's less bloating. And this is why I really don't like or use food intolerance testing in my practice. It's not, I feel like your money can be spent better elsewhere if you have a budget for testing. It's definitely not, I would not suggest anyone uses it on food intolerance testing. It's not usually the foods that are the problem. It's usually the gut that they're going into. So that's the biggest reasons why I'm not a massive fan of food intolerance testing. Now, going back to bloating itself after we've eaten. So if you're bloating instantly after eating, then it's likely a low stomach acid issue. So stomach acid is also known as hydrochloric acid. It's likely because you haven't made enough stomach acid, or maybe any, before you've eaten, and or a leaky gut situation, intestinal permeability. But either way, if you have a leaky gut, you're likely to have low stomach acid, because, you know, a leaky gut is essentially a depleted, unhealthy gut. So you're not going to have those wonderful productions of all the different, you know, the sort of secretions of all the different elements that we need to help break down our food. So we want to really encourage the production of stomach acid. Like I said, bloating instantly after you've eaten, or even if you are bloating later, either way, we really want to encourage the production of stomach acid. But if you're bloating instantly after eating, it's likely low stomach acid. Contrary to popular belief that high stomach acid is the problem, sometimes it is. But for the most part, the most common thing that we see, particularly women, stress, you know, a lot going on, and then we're moving through perimenopause as well, it's usually low stomach acid, not high. And actually, low stomach acid can also cause the same symptoms that we would see with high stomach acid, like acid reflux, indigestion. So if we want to encourage the production of stomach acid before we eat, then we want to do various things. So why do we need stomach acid first? So first of all, when we swallow food, it first of all goes into the stomach, which is above the small intestine. So first of all, it goes into the stomach. And in there, we should have lots of lovely stomach acid in there to coat that food and kill off any unwanted bacteria, pathogens, you know, all those things that we don't want. So before that food then gets into the small intestine to be broken down and absorbed. So that's what happens when the stomach meets the food. We want to bathe that food in stomach acid to kill off that unwanted bacteria and prevent, you know, food poisoning. And it also starts the really important process of breaking down the protein elements of your meal. Breaking down protein is so important. Obviously, protein breaks down into different amino acids, which we use to build muscle mass, but also to support so many other systems of the body, immune health, you know, you name it, everything that we need amino acids for. So that's a really, and it's quite difficult to break down protein. So we need the stomach acid to help facilitate that portion. And then stomach acid also, not only does it help with the breakdown of protein and the absorption of the amino acids from that protein, it's also really important for the absorption of B12 and iron. So anyone, you know, I get lots of clients who come to me and say, I'm low in B12. I don't know why, like they've done testing. And they'll say they're low in B12. Why am I low in B12? I eat lots of animal foods. I shouldn't have a B12 deficiency. Or they'll be low in their ferritin is low, so they're low in iron. And again, they say I eat lots of really good quality you know, animal sources of iron. Why am I low iron? Usually, especially in our 40s and beyond, it's a low stomach acid issue, not so much a dietary issue. So we need to work on, you know, rather, yes, we can throw in a supplement with B12 and iron to help the person in the instant, but we also want to work on why they're not absorbing their vitamin B12 and their iron from the foods that they are eating that obviously contain B12 and iron. So that's where we're working on stomach acid production. So how do we encourage stomach acid, also known as hydrochloric acid, as I said? So deep breathing before our meals, this is really, really important. And this isn't to say that we all have to go off and meditate before we start eating. But what most of us do is we just, particularly, you know, if we're eating in a restaurant, it might be different. But at home, rushing at work to, in between, you know, to eat meals, we're usually just rushing straight into that meal. So we're going from one stressful situation straight to eating. And we haven't given any signals. The brain hasn't given any signals down to the digestive system that everything's calm and you can switch on the digestive processes, one of those being the secretion of stomach acid, hydrochloric acid, before we eat. There's no signals there. There's no signaling. So the food just goes straight into a mouth and a gut that hasn't even really been switched on. The digestive process has not been turned on. So simply taking a couple of minutes to just do a few deep breaths in through the nose, mouth closed to a count of four, out through the nose, mouth closed to a count of six. So breathing in for four, breathing out for six, breathing in for four, breathing out for six. Doing this a few times is enough to tell the brain, to tell the gut that everything's calm. We can switch on that digestive process. And ideally as well, we want to take in the sight and the smell of our food before we start eating. So this is why when we're eating in a restaurant, our digestive process is probably going to be better. Particularly, you know, as long as we're not eating in a restaurant in a rush, if we're going there for joy, for enjoyment, because what's happening in a restaurant is that you're sitting there and you're smelling the food that's being cooked. And then when plates get put down on tables next to you, you're seeing their food and you're like, oh, yum. And, you know, when you can feel your saliva, you're literally salivating like over these people's meals that you can see in front of you and over the smell that you can smell in the restaurant if you're sitting near the chef. And so that is going to encourage the production within the saliva of our it's encouraging the production of saliva. It's also encouraging the production of stomach acid in the stomach, so that when the food meets the stomach acid in the stomach, it's going to be broken down and bathed in all those lovely juices that help to get rid of any unwanted bacteria. But the saliva also has some enzymes in there, some sort of the first line enzymes is in that saliva that we feel, that we notice when we're smelling food ready to eat. And when we then put our food in our mouth and we chew it alongside that saliva, meshing the two together, that is already putting enzymes into the digestive process. And then we swallow that food and we've now made enough stomach acid for that food to be met with down in the stomach. And then that is the start of the digestive process. So I always say, a lot of us practitioners do say this, is that the digestive process starts in the brain. It doesn't start in the gut. The brain has to tell the gut that it's time to start digesting food. Get ready because food is coming. And then we see and we smell food. We take our time over it. If we're making it at home, we want to take in the smells of like maybe the garlic and the onions that we're using as we first start cooking and the rest of the food. And then we salivate and then we sit down and we relax. We don't want to be eating when we're rushed or we're stressed or on the go. We need to take our time before we start to eat. And that is where the digestive process starts and it switches on the gut. So most important ways to encourage the production of stomach acid is take a few deep breaths before you start to eat. Don't eat rushed. Don't be stressed. Have that, you know, transition time between whatever stressful task you were doing to now it's time to eat. And I need to just let my brain know to tell my gut that we can switch the processes on and get ready. And then chew every single mouthful extremely well. Smaller mouthfuls, I have to tell myself this all the time, have smaller mouthfuls, put less on your fork. take that food off the fork, chew it, put your knife and fork down, chew it really, really well before you then pick up your knife and fork again. I always say this to myself when I'm eating, stop putting your next forkful in before you even finish swallowing the one that's in there. And I don't know, I think subconsciously, I'm not in a rush, but subconsciously, my brain is saying, you're in a rush, you need to move on to the next task. And there isn't anything, it's just washing up after dinner and then maybe watching a bit of telly. But it's like, I'm just, you know, we're programmed, we're wired to do everything quickly and move on to the next thing. So a reminder, if you're like me, before, like, put your knife and fork down when you put that forkful in, make sure you've swallowed that forkful before you pick up the next forkful, and don't put as much on the fork. And something that you can do as well is have a tablespoon or a little bit or less of apple cider vinegar. So raw apple cider vinegar, it's called, from with the mother. that's what it says on the label, unpasteurized. Before your meal. So just mix it in a little bit of water, just in case the apple cider vinegar, like that tablespoon or less, is a little bit too much on its own. Just dilute it in a little bit of water, small bit of water, and take that down before you start to eat your meal. That can also help the production of stomach acid. But yeah, the chewing thing is so, so important. And I have clients that will say to me before they've done anything else in their program, they'll say, already I'm noticing I'm bloating less, or the bloating's gone, or my stools are more formed. I've got better quality stools now because they've just slowed down and started to chew every mouthful really well. And they cannot believe the difference. So they say, oh, now instead of taking 5 minutes to eat my dinner, I'll take 15 or 20 minutes to eat my dinner. But everything else is so much better just from taking that extra time to eat your food. We shouldn't be finishing a meal in 5 minutes. So very, very powerful stuff. Now, in some cases, my clients will use a hydrochloric acid HCL supplement, but we do a little test beforehand just to make sure it is indeed what they need, or that they don't use too much of it or too little. But yeah, it could be something that works for some people. Now, moving on from the stomach acid. So the first thing is we have that saliva in the mouth that mixes with our food, then that goes down into the stomach and it meets the stomach acid, the hydrochloric acid, which bathes the food, gets rid of unwanted bacteria, starts the process of breaking down protein and absorbing amino acids, B12 and iron. And then that food moves into the small intestine. And in the small intestine, the small intestine releases digestive enzymes, which that food is met with. To aid in the digestion of all the other components of the food, the fats. We have like bile acids and things to help break down the fat portion of the food, the carbohydrate portion of the food, and other enzymes doing all their different work to continue breaking down the protein as well. So if you're bloating we talked about instantly would be potentially low stomach acid. But if you're bloating about an hour or so after eating, and or you're seeing undigested food particles in your stools when you go to the toilet, then you're likely missing the important enzymes that the small intestine releases when the food goes down there. Now, we can work this back, because the more saliva we produce before we start eating, so the more saliva that our chewing the food is mixed with, and the more stomach acid that we have, the optimal amount of stomach acid that we have when we first swallow our food, the more the small intestine will make the enzymes. So the more enzymes it's going to make once the food gets there. So we need to take it back a step and always focus on the first lot of habits that I just mentioned. And for some, it could be really helpful to supplement with a digestive enzyme, a quality digestive enzyme product. They just take one capsule with their meal to help encourage the production of those enzymes. I do that at the moment. I had a really bad bout of digestion and stools just were not what they used to be about 4 months ago. And this coincided with moving, with my big move from London down to Margate, which I found incredibly stressful. And I'm still getting over it, to be honest. But that really shifted my digestion. There's no surprises there. That was the stress in my case. And it just really shifted things. And for months, I could not get things back to where they were. So yeah, like my bowel movements were completely different. Oh, I just thought, gosh. And obviously the stress of the move, but also I was moving through perimenopause. I'm moving through it every day. So the two combined just really had a big impact on my gut health. Had that been 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have been affected like that, but because I'm in perimenopause, I'm more sensitive to the stress, right? So that goes for all of us. So I started to take a digestive enzyme with every meal, and it's helped so much. I've now got my bowel movements back to what they were, and things are really, really improving. So sometimes we just need this extra support. Will I want to continue taking it long term? Yes, I probably will, because I think I'm just more sensitive as I move through perimenopause, and I just need that extra support wherever I can get it. So yes, I will continue taking them. I take one capsule with every meal. Okay, so also improving probiotics, you know, friendly bacteria in the gut will also be really helpful. Like I said, we're more likely to be depleted in gut bacteria as we move through our 40s, and that has a big impact on bloating because they are so protective. Our friendly bacteria prevent bloating, basically. They help with the breakdown of our food. They help the gut lining. They help to reduce or, you know, heal leaky gut. So we also want to be looking into that. So I hope this has been helpful. I hope it's given you a little bit of insight into how things are working, and, you know, so you can stop sort of blaming yourself or thinking there's something wrong with you, or blaming your foods. It's not your lunch. It's not your dinner. It's not what you ate. Sometimes it is, of course. There'll be certain foods that cause us to feel bloated. You know, if we have a whole load of bread with our meals and a massive portion of pasta, yeah, we're more likely to feel more bloated. But for the most part, it's not so much the food. It is the gut that food is going into. So don't blame yourself. You know, this is natural physiology, but that doesn't mean that we just have to live with it and accept it. There is a lot that we can do. It's not always about cutting more foods out. This is where I hear this a lot. I hear people say, I did a food intolerance test and there were 13 foods that I'm intolerant to, so I've cut them out. And I'm thinking, most of these foods are really nourishing. So, and I'm thinking, I don't say anything unless the person is coming to me as a client and they are asking, or if they're a really good friend. But, you know, I'm just left there thinking, well, it's the gut. You need to work on the gut that food is going into. You don't need to cut out all those foods. So yeah, it's more about focusing on gut health, chewing really well, all of the habits that I've talked about, and then just adding in that right support, you know, the gut healing support that I've talked about, the probiotics, maybe the enzymes. So I hope it's been helpful. And of course, as ever, if you want help figuring out what your gut needs most right now, I would love to support you inside my 1-to-1 3-month package. This is where we can go really deep into your own unique situation, join all the dots, and make real transformation happen. So if you want to speak to me about that, you can go to my website. All the details are in the show notes, or you can drop me a message and we can go from there. So as always, if you have any questions, whether it's about this specific episode or things you'd like me to cover in future episodes or about working with me, just drop me a message. I really do want to hear from you, and I'd love to know any particular topics or questions you want addressed on future episodes. So bye for now, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.